Ah, the Addams Family. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're dusting off something from the old Patreon. We did Addams Family Values a year or so ago. And when we did it because they were releasing the animated pictures. Now, for those of you who don't remember this, in the early 90s, we got addicted to remaking TV shows from the 70s and 80s, in this case even earlier, into movies. Things like The Fugitive, things like SWAT, things like the Brady Bunch movie, things like Addams Family. Now, the two movies in the 90s, we did the first one years ago on the main feed, and then we did the sequel here for a Patreon release. Since then, they've done two animated movies, which did fine, and now Tim Burton is doing another live-action version. So in honor of the Tim Burton version, we're releasing our Addams Family Value from behind the Patreon paywall. Please enjoy, guys. Thanks. Welcome to Myopia Movies. Thank you so much for being a special patron to hear this episode. This is our October special. A not horror movie in a horror movie month. But that means, unfortunately, Brittany's not with us. Instead, we have Lauren visiting, which is, well, she's back again.
It's even been a better.
While. It's been a while since you've been on the show, which, of course, is my fault. I'm pretending like, pretending like it's not. In the meantime, though, we should mention that this is Addams Family Values from 1993, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, which, I don't know, it's the sixth movie we've done with Chris Lloyd where he almost gets to make out with someone but still has not made out with anyone. I think he kissed one person, which is Back to the Future 3, on film. I think that's the only time he's actually kissed someone in film.
He kind of kissed Joan Cusack in this.
Yeah.
Well, she kissed him.
It's a very awkward
scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he still gets it at the end of this movie with, dementia?
Yes. Dementia. It's a beautiful name.
It means insanity.
My name is Fester.
It means to rot.
I mean, I was aroused. Anyway, let's just do this. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Movies and Riffer on CineProm. Panel we have.
And I'm John, host of
Mission Briefing. That's the one.
I could remember the name of my own podcast. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, absolutely.
So we'll finally get a No Time to Die episode. Fingers crossed.
If it would just like to come out, I would like to do an episode.
Yeah, that'll be our Mission Briefing movie this month if it's come out.
Hello, this is Daniel, a frequent contributor to popdose.com, and unfortunately not an Adams.
That's right.
And I'm Lauren, and like Wednesday, I am just so excited to be here.
So, we did the first Addams Family movie five seasons ago.
That.
Yeah. A while ago.
It's in the back catalog, but where you can still get it, I think. So this is the sequel that came out just 2 years later. This is when Barry Sonnenfeld had become like a huge director. Because I think the movie he does after this is Men in Black.
I think you're right. Yeah. No, he does Get Shorty after this, and then he does Men in Black.
Yeah, so he went from being a cinematographer, I think, to being like kind of a huge deal, and now he's does mostly TV.
If I remember right, the first Addams Family movie was his first film.
Yes.
His first feature film.
And Spielberg pushed him to do it, I think, right? Was Spielberg the producer, something like that?
That sounds right.
It might have been. I don't think he was like officially the producer, but I mean, Steven Spielberg in Hollywood tells you you should do something, you should probably do it.
That's right.
I love that he has a cameo in this too.
Yes, he does.
Hitchcock.
Yeah, and he did in the first one too.
I believe so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Lauren, you have notes. Do you want to try to give us the plot? Because this movie's kind of circuitous.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, absolutely. It's a sequel. And obviously that we talked about, but this time Morticia and Gomez have added a new baby boy to the family who they named Pubert, which I think is hysterical.
Such a good name.
Yeah. They were debating between Lucifer, you know, Mal or whatever, but they landed on Pubert. Wednesday and Pugsley, just like any siblings, don't like a new sibling, but like other ones, they want to actually try to kill their baby brother.
They're just playing,
exactly. So because of this, Gomez and Morticia finally decide, okay, we need a nanny to take care of these babies. So they go through this whole sequence of different nannies. It's hilarious. I love that scene. And finally, they land on this new nanny named Debbie, who is played by Joan Cusack. And Turns out Debbie is a serial killer who marries rich bachelors and merges them to get their inheritance. She's called the Black Widow. But
she's also, I'm just speaking from my perspective here, a complete thirst trap in this movie.
Yeah, she's hot. She's definitely hot. So she seduces Uncle Fester. So we find out that's the whole reason that she's there is because she knows about Uncle Fester. And Wednesday gets onto her trail pretty quickly. And so Debbie sends Wednesday and Pugsley to a summer camp called Camp Chippewa, which for me is just the freaking highlight of this movie. I mean, the Thanksgiving play and all that, I'm sure we'll get into. It's just hysterical. But Debbie and Fester do end up getting engaged. She tries to kill him several times in different ways. Boombox in a bathtub. She tries to blow up the house. Anyway, none of it works. And then they kind of show, so it flips back between Debbie trying to do that and the camp, the summer camp. But then at the end, Debbie reveals herself and tries to, you know, explain, tries to electrocute them basically, but baby Pubert escapes and manipulates the wires and somehow electrocutes her. And so basically the new baby saves the day. So then everyone's finally okay with the new baby.
Very good.
Basically. Yeah. Good basically.
Memory. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, we're done. No. All
right. See you next time.
So first thing I want to talk about in this movie is, I guess we can, the Academy Award nomination, but it looks incredible. These movies all look incredible. There's miniature work. This is done. The production design is done by Ken Adams, who we've talked about on Mission Briefing before, cause he did 8 Bond movies.
Ken Adams?
Ken Adams, yes.
No, a guy named Adams is the production designer, said, on this movie?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
He also worked a lot with Stanley Kubrick. He did Barry Lyndon and Dr. Strangelove. He did the Adams Family.
I know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he did almost all the Sean Connery Bond movies, except for From Russia with Love, up through Roger Moore's Moonraker. So, like, he nails this. The camp, first of all, is done in like Burton-esque pastels, and it's horrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, they play at Disney here, which is fantastic.
For the longest time, I remember when this first movie came out, I thought it was Tim Burton.
It looks like Burton.
Because it looks so much like Burton.
I think the reason they picked Barry Sonnenfeld was because he was the cinematographer on Beetlejuice or Edward Scissorhands or something.
I think Beetlejuice. Yeah, okay. But I will say, it looks like it in the same way that... Okay, the fucking font, the Addams Family font, is the Men in Black font. That scene where the bug is flying up to the windshield, that is an Addams Family shot.
Like almost chalk on a wall type font.
Very thin, very spindly, very Nightmare Before Christmassy. It does have that Tim Burton feel, which I
like.
And they nailed the Addams Family house like they did in the first one. You can almost see the spider webs coming off the chandeliers, and the house just feels old and lived in and dusty.
Well, the best part of this is how they're taking visual cues from the original New Yorker cartoons.
Yes.
Well, they are. But they take it a step further. As Lauren referenced, they're trying to kill the baby. And one of the best early ones is they're standing on the cupola, the very bell tower of this building, the very top. And Wednesday asks Pugsley, so which is going to land first, the baby or the bowling ball? Well, there's only one way to find out. They drop it. And the baby's falling. And then halfway down, Gomez opens the door and catches the baby and goes, darling. And then the ball hits, of course.
Lurch. Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning, because there's a lot of great jokes at the start.
There's some great jokes.
Now, I love this movie. But to differentiate it from the first one, I think the first one had a far better plot.
Yeah.
This one nailed the one-liners.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is more of a joke.
I think that's spot on.
Yes. Each scene of this movie could almost stand alone as an Adams, like New Yorker comic. Like, it's just, each scene is made for the one line, the punchline.
Well, it opens with the scene of Morticia knitting, and she's like, I'm going to have a baby right now. And then she's being wheeled through the hospital, and Gomez is standing over her, asking her if she's in any pain, and hard as a rock, and you can tell.
Yeah, and they do the thing.
Now, the best part of this is when they ask Morticia if she wants any anesthesia, and she's like, no, thank you, but do ask the children.
That is good. I will say,
I don't know who's a better villain, Dan Hedaya from the first one or Joan Cusack, but they do nail this villain character. She just matters a lot less in this movie until she super matters at the end.
The best villain in this movie are the two camp counselors, who are Peter McNichol, who you remember from Ghostbusters 2, and Christine Baranski, who she's in a ton of shit. She was in Chicago.
She was in...
Oh, she's been in tons.
Isn't she the sex pot who's hitting on... in Godzilla, she's the one who keeps hitting on Matthew Broderick when he's looking at the worms at Chernobyl.
No, no. Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
she's the mom in Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
She's
also in The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Yes, she is.
The terrifying Jim Carrey one.
You two are still living?
Yeah, I guess that's a stage.
They are very good.
There are some great one-liners. My favorite death when they try to kill the baby is the guillotine. So Wednesday sets up this guillotine and pretends it's a French Revolution.
Woe to the Republic.
How do you plead?
Guilty.
Guilty. And then the baby like somehow catches the blade.
We also have to describe the baby. The baby comes out with a mustache and and the hair parted to look exactly like Gomez. Which is awesome.
And I learned on my research of this, it's actually, they use twin girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess at that age.
And I saw recent pictures. Of, yeah, really I just thought that was so interesting.
By the way.
They're now 25.
John and Lauren, I think, mentioned how good the names are. Originally, you know, these characters didn't have any names because in The New Yorker, there just wasn't the space. So he invented the names Charles Adams did for the TV show. And Pubert was his original pitch for Pugsley.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pugsley was going to be Pubert, but the TV network affiliates at the time said no because that sounded too dirty. So that's where Pugsley comes from. So I just love the fact that they're paying tribute to the actual guy who started all this madness.
And they explain it too, because they ask, like, what's the baby's name? Well, we thought long and hard. We wanted something that he could live with, something that wouldn't make kids have fun with him in the playground. So we chose Pubert. Of course you did.
Well, it's so funny because Morticia's strange, and but Gomez is kind of a name. But like, it's great. We can get through this. Carol Kane is in this again as Granny, playing the same character she did in The Princess Bride.
She replaces the original Granny from the first one.
She did. Yeah. She replaces it. Yeah. And
but she does a better job.
I agree. Yes. Yeah. And she got it because her and Angelica are actually close in real life. They're buds.
Yeah.
So that's how she
Kelly was my wife. Kelly was very upset when she found out that was Carol Kane because she thought
Princess Bride. Yeah,
how did I not notice that? Doing the exact same bit. Crotchety old crone.
Yeah,
number two. The cast in this is phenomenal, though. I mean, Raul Julia, Christopher Lloyd, Joan Cusack. You can't get better.
Tony Shalhoub. Tony Shalhoub's in it.
Hitting on the whatever her name is Debbie Jelinski. I will also say I love Carol Struycken, who's Lurch, who's also plays the bodyguard of Counselor Troy's mom in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. He was also the giant in Twin Peaks,
and wasn't he in Tim Burton movie's Big Fish?
Matthew Laurie, I think his name was.
Okay, and then the guy who plays Thing is Chris Hart. He just does commercials as Thing. He is always Thing. It's great.
I always imagine he's David Duchovny's character from...
Californication?
No, the blue steel, like, this is a house made for ants.
Oh, Zoolander.
Zoolander.
He's that character. The one with, like, the hand in the jar because he was a hand actor. Like, that's what I imagine Thing's rest of Thing was.
He also plays the hand in Idle Hands.
Of course he does.
Of course.
Oh, of course
he does. So there is a guy who's like, I'm known for my hands. As Debbie says, I'm good with my hands.
Let's bring back to the movie. We mentioned that the baby gets born, or for all I know, it's the Addams Family. It came out of Morticia the same way the creature and alien came out of John Hurt.
I should have liked that.
And then the other kids try to kill the baby by like tossing it off the roof or guillotining it. So they try and audition a bunch of nannies.
Oh God, this is a scene out of Mrs. Doubtfire.
It really is.
Though I will say it is the puppet lady got me.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, with Wednesday's puppet, that was great.
That was
I'll clean my room.
in exchange for your immortal soul. Mm-hmm.
Satan rubbing his hands together.
Killed me.
That was fantastic.
And that's Cynthia Nixon.
Yeah,
is the environmental one, which I just thought was hilarious.
Well, yep. And again, I don't know who produced this, but like Sonnenfeld got real people to do every bit. They all committed, and it lets you know why that Casper movie is a shame, because people love these properties and they'll clearly show up, right? And so to make one of these kinds of things bad or boring seems to be impossible. How do you do that? Everyone, like, the fact that people show up for this movie lets you know you can do anything with it.
Mm-hmm. I also like the actual call-outs to horror movies they did, because there was that scene, I think it's after Joan Cusack's Hired, where Gomez and Morticia go up to the kids, like, now what do we say to the new nanny? Be afraid.
Yes.
Be very afraid.
Well, I mean, and like when we get to camp, we essentially have a Children of the Corn kind of thing going on. Mm-hmm. We have, like, it's mm-hmm. all there.
Oh, these kids are like 1936 Berlin Hitler youth.
Well, they make a point of saying, like, this is a camp for... I forget what the actual words were, but like for prestigious, wealthy, well-adjusted right. children of society.
That leads to one of my favorite exchanges in this entire movie. With Mercedes McNabb from Buffy the Vampire Slayer mm-hmm. later. She's the little blonde girl at the camp, and her dad's
Amanda,
yeah. and her yeah. dad's bragging over her. It's like, she's already skipped two grades. What about your son? Probation.
That's right.
Which is... As me laughing so
as
hard.
Puffing on a cigar.
Yes.
Yeah. And she is also in the first movie. She's the yeah. Girl Scout who sells cookies in front of their hotel.
Are they made out of Girl Scouts?
That's yeah. right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Although I think Classic. In the first movie she doesn't have a named role, but she does get right. quite a good bit. And you mentioned the camp counselors are Christine Baranski as Becky and Peter McNichol as Gary. And they are SNL characters. They're yes. practically the cheerleaders, for, you know, Will Ferrell's cheerleaders.
Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry, those yeah. were the days.
No, my yeah. favorite exchange with Amanda is when she's like, I'll be the victim.
All your life.
That was pretty good.
Well, because the bit is essentially a Friday the 13th bit, where she dives in the water and the bubbles are coming up like Freddy's got her. And she's like, I can't swim. That's Christina Ricci is really good in this.
She's incredible.
Yeah. There are so many good moments with her. Like even at the beginning when they're waiting in the hospital waiting room and like talking to another kid about another upcoming baby.
Oh my god.
And then the stork put a magic little egg in mommy, and then they grew into my baby brother.
Into a diamond, and then it became my baby brother. And she's like, my parents had sex. And you know, you just hear it through the walls in that house. Just awful.
Christina Ricci was 13 years old. Can we just talk about that for a second?
She
was 13. Yeah. And to me, she steals yeah. every scene she's in.
She's one of the best actors in there.
Yeah. This was actually her first kiss.
Well, that's funny.
With Joel. Yeah.
With David
she's
Crumholz.
13. Yeah, with David Crumholz. So, like, if you can imagine, she was only 13 and doing that. That's just amazing.
It's more of a shame that everybody in this film was like, they were either established or they went on to do great things. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Pugsley. The kid that did Pugsley, like, I looked him up, like, this is basically the only two movies he was in, with the Addams Family movies, and then he stayed in Hollywood, but he's doing, like, he's transportation, or he's crew, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that's
his
cool.
career. Like, he stayed in
ironically,
it.
His name is Jim Workman, and he's not working.
He's typecast, yeah, man.
You know what, there's no shame in being a crew member in Hollywood. You can still make a good living.
Oh, yeah, sure, are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's amazing. But to add on to your point, Nick, I just want this on the record. Everyone talks about Morticia and Gomez are relationship goals.
No, they're fantastic. Well,
so many people talk about it. Think about it. They are so loving and devoted to each other. They're actually very attentive and loving parents. Awesome relationship and sex life. Like, if you... They support each other. There's passion. They're actually relationship goals.
Well, and they're also very proud of their family. Like, when they're in camp... It's so funny because... I teach at a fancy private school, Lauren and I went to a fancy private school, and we know the parents of that are there. They're, you know, they're showing up in like cool coats. They're acting very smug about their kids. And we were watching this movie, one family movie night. I had a beer in my hand, and he comes on stage. Put the beer down. I started looking up smoking jackets because I will never be that cool, but I want to think I'm that cool. Smoking jackets
makes it cool.
Absolutely,
dude. And again, Angelica Houston is this tall, slender woman with a V-neck down to her navel, And he's wearing a smoking jacket over a vest with a cigar and he goes, gentlemen, like the we'll get there to the bachelor party scene. Which is, but again, he's holding this room of monster men and he looks almost not crazy. It's wonderful.
Well, he's dressed in like fox hunt gear. Mm-hmm. Like the red coat, tails, top hat.
Speaking of a Bond movie.
Yeah, really.
Right. It's what's the dance for the first one, the babushka?
Babushka.
Yeah. The babushka scene from the first one, they do here with a tango at date night.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're kind of skipping ahead a little bit.
Who cares?
Because, well, we at least need to establish who Joan Cusack is, which right. we do. She's hired as the nanny.
Yes.
It turns out she's the serial killer, the Black Widow, as Peter Graves tells us on a TV show called America's Most Disgusting Crimes.
Which is great.
And then apparently she wants to marry Uncle Fester because the Adams family is actually really rich.
Which is what we established in the last movie.
Right.
Yeah. With Dan Hedaya trying to steal their wealth. So we mentioned this kind of scene at the beginning where they're looking for nannies to one degree or another. Debbie comes in out of another movie. She's wearing all white. And the level of cleavage she shows depends on how much she's trying to hit on Uncle Fester. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how little Angelica Houston is impressed by her and how Gomez completely ignores her. It's well done.
Mm-hmm.
But the baby likes her. The kids don't kill her right away. Presumably there's just dead nannies in the back of the house. But
she wins them over by saying, oh, the baby's so cute. I just want to eat them all up and squeeze him to death.
Yeah,
and Gomez and Morticia just like side glance to each other and just smile. Like,
this is the one.
You're one of us.
Right.
Meanwhile, she gets her room out of, I don't know, Psycho or something. It's this really creepy, threadbare room.
Yeah, it's the dungeon.
And then on the night table, we have all these pictures of like Forbes magazine with Fester on them as this millionaire who is single. Right.
Yes.
I did feel this is the one part that I'd never noticed before, but I felt like I missed the joke. Where Peter Graves says like she's out of money, and it pans to like a collection of magazines, and there's like a dollar bill and some change on it, and it's panning over these magazines, and I feel like I'm supposed to get a joke about these, like kind of like the Amy Fisher joke that was later on, like it seems like it was something from that era, but I could not find it online as to what I was missing.
Maybe I think they're just really trying to establish that she's the Black Widow.
Probably.
Because you didn't know that until then. I think that was the main goal of that scene, is to establish that this is the Black Widow. That's who she is, who they're talking about.
Are these,
because before you don't know that.
Are these the Fester magazines?
Yeah. And some of them do have fake titles, but...
Yeah. But like Forbes is on there as like one of the most...
Can you imagine if you're the production designer and you're just like, well, we can just ask Forbes to see if they'll let us use them in the movie. But yeah, you have like... Houses of the Rich and Bizarre is listed in Houses of the Rich and Famous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love some of the fictional titles in here. Like when Fester, before he meets Joan Cusack, is reading a book called Lonely Men and the Women Who Avoid Them.
That's good.
Yeah. Love it.
But yeah, so she eventually...
Strange Men.
Strange Men.
Otherwise we get emails.
That's right.
We get emails?
Again, I think that scene, same thing. They're trying to establish that he's lonely... He's looking for somebody, so he's
and she's
vulnerable.
Obviously a predator.
And she's vulnerable. No, she's hot in this movie.
Mm-hmm. She's working it.
These Adams men, where do you find them? It has to be damp.
That was another good line.
Like I said, the one-liners in this, like when she first meets Gomez, it's like, oh, what a lady killer. And he just smirks and says, acquitted.
Well, anyway, Joan Cusack's hitting on Fester, so they go on the double date, and that's where you get the tango scene. And
poor Fester.
Yeah, poor Fester.
He is a strange
thing. He's sticking breadsticks up his
nose. Gomez is being smooth, and he's tangoing with Morticia, and Fester vomited on Debbie. That's how you know that he likes you.
Mm.
And sticking South breadsticks Park. Up his nose.
South Park taught me that.
Exactly.
Yeah, and... they're eating in a cave. I don't know where this is supposed to be.
It's their favorite bistro, apparently.
And it's been renovated.
And I do love how there's also, like, a prince there. Because, like, at one point, there's, like, this duchess, you know, this cleavage, like, this buxom blonde. And Fester and Gomez lights her cigarette. And so Morticia then takes the rose from the flower of, like, this guy with, like, 30 fake chevrons on him. It's cartoonish. I love this. I love every scene in this movie. But again, it's filmed like they're on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back to the first one, like when they had the mamushka, the things like that, that there's this whole unknown, like, for lack of a better word, subterranean culture where these Adamses take part. They're not, like, in this world, they are not outliers. They are part of the usual thing.
Well, and he's clearly, like, a mover and shaker, and, like, people just know him, mm-hmm. which is crazy, but it's great.
Well, in the first movie, we got him pissing off that judge, so, yeah. I imagine that's just how everyone views the Adams.
Well, it kind of goes back to the TV show, that they are normal people, but they're quirky. They turn mm-hmm. the suburbia on its head.
If I may make a guess, they're creepy and they're kooky.
Yeah. You might be right, and altogether mm-hmm. spooky. Yeah.
I mean, that does remind me of the Nathan Lane scene in this later on.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Which is a fantastic scene.
No, but again, relationship goals.
Yes.
Day, night, they're paying attention, they're having fun, they're... I don't know.
But even that tango, like, that was a little bit unusual for them because it showed... It was played for humor, but it showed that Morticia and Gomez could be jealous of the other one. So when Gomez gets he lights the cigarette of the beautiful woman... Morticia whips him around and you know, gets him back on task. And Morticia, was it she grabbed the clams and starts playing with them?
Yes.
she grabbed them from like the prince's table or something, and Morticia just whips her around and it's like, no, you're coming back to me.
Yeah. And then he spins her so fast the floor lights on fire because this is also a cartoon,
of course.
Which is great. Around this time, when they're on the date night, I believe, this is when Wednesday sees Debbie threatening the baby, essentially.
Yeah,
go to sleep.
That happens beforehand, and I mean around this time they're at the camp. But I know what you're talking about when she's like, "You little bastard," or something.
Yeah, and that's when she convinces Gomez to send them to camp.
Right,
right.
Where there's that weird little dark-haired boy. I've already forgotten the actor's name.
David Krumholz. But I will say their introduction to the scene is great because Amanda goes up and goes, "Hi, I'm Amanda, I think Buckman, right?
Something like that.
Why are you dressed like that?" And she goes, "Like what?" And he goes, "Like you're going to a funeral. Why do you dress like someone died?" And she goes, "Wait." And that's it. That's the character in that show.
Also, when they're introducing Morticia's like, Wednesday's at that special age where a girl has one thing on her mind.
Boys.
Homicide. Which is, again, the one-liners in this movie are fantastic.
And some of the best lines and best scenes of this film are at camp where the kids are, well, not so much Pugsley because we don't see so much of him.
But he's Wednesday, not a good actor.
Well, and he's not a great character. But Wednesday is just completely at odds with all these preppy girls, and they're telling ghost stories, and they're like, "Okay, Wednesday, it's your turn to, you know, go around the horn and give your little bit to the story." And Wednesday's like, "I don't want to do it." "Just do it. Tell a ghost story. You don't know anything scary, do you?" So Wednesday, you know, gins herself up. It's like, and then the bad guy happened, and all their old noses grew back, and the girls just freak out and effectively just run out of the cabin.
And that's what causes Wednesday and Pugsley to have to go to the Harmony Hut,
which is what happens during the double date scene simultaneously. Yeah. The Harmony Hut is apparently a special cabin for misbehaving boys and girls at this camp. That's filled with nothing but happy things. And
Disney movies.
And the Sound of and Music.
The Sound of Music.
Which is, I'm just going to put this on record, an object of torture.
Well, and this
wrong.
Is
fuck The Sound of Music. That's a shit movie, but anyway.
Oh, no. Please. Whoa.
That's harsh.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. I would say, they make a lot of Disney jokes, because I think the first three movies they threaten them with are Bambi, The Little Mermaid, and I forget, Cinderella. Well,
the biggest part of this scene, and this was probably bad timing considering it was 1993, was...
Michael Jackson.
Yes, the dark-haired boy coming in, and then he sees a Michael Jackson poster and starts screaming.
Okay, so the crazy part about that is, again, I always have to do research for this. Michael Jackson was supposed to do a song for this.
Yes.
It's called...
Is It Scary?
Is It Scary.
Yeah.
And so I don't, there was some legal stuff happened. People were sued, but he ended up not doing the song for this movie, but it came out later in another album.
He was initially...
So I don't know if that was like supposed to be a dig to Michael Jackson because of the lawsuits and the legal stuff, because they didn't do the song, but I think that's what was why that was brought in, right?
You say that, but this was the same year as Free Willy, and he did the Free Willy song.
Mm.
So I might just be like, at this point, he was hot shit, and people were fighting over him, and a contract fell through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a Simpsons joke was, like, the year before was he was on The Simpsons. So, right? Like, it was 92? That was their second season? Third season?
It was their third season, I think.
Which would be 92. So, anyway.
There must have been some legal lawsuit beef going on, point.
It was 91.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
So, but I will say... the other movies we do end up hearing is The Sound of Music and I think Annie.
Yes.
Where
the sun will come out.
But again, like, they're just staring as though they're in Gitmo, and it's funny. That scene is funny because at this point, Krumholtz is with them.
Well, the funniest part of that scene was the fact that Krumholtz was holding a Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, and he was like, I just wanted to read it, and Peter McNichol comes in and snatches him, and he's like, not on my watch, Four Eyes.
We will say, too, when they eventually do the Pilgrim play, they put all the minorities as the Indians.
Which was one of the best
scenes. Can we talk about this?
Oh, we have to.
This is the rest of the
show.
This
is maybe the best scene of the whole movie. When Wednesday is pretending that she has been converted after being in the Harmony Hut, she's changed her ways. She's good. She'll be a good little girl. She'll be part of this play. And she gets her brother and Joel to act out the Indians. And they kill all the Indians and there's blood. It's
so
amazing.
Apparently, I will say, too, when she comes out of the Happy Hut, she tries to smile.
Yes.
And everyone starts screaming. And it's such a good gag because, I mean, again, Lauren, you act in theater. It's all about how she moves her mouth, and she's trying to smile, and it's all subtle movements.
Effective.
We did Matilda not long ago. Mara Wilson was about the same age. Like, it's hard to do, and that she's still... The camera is right there. She's taking up the entire middle third trying to smile, and these kids are behind the adults screaming in terror. It's a scene out of Ren and Stimpy with Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy. Like, Ren is, like, busted inside. Oh, it's so good.
Except at the end, we do see her smile for real, but...
When she burns
for
the line.
For a completely different reason.
Yeah. Completely different.
Not
quite
then, but to explain this whole play, apparently it's a tradition at this camp for them to put on this big camp play at the end, and Peter McNichol has written a play about the first Thanksgiving, and a man is going to be the good little pilgrim girl, and all, like Lauren said, all the minorities are cast as the First Nation nurse who were there,
and all
my
the other
God.
Pilgrims are the blonde white girls.
Yes. And oh my God, this thing is incredible. Even before the destruction happens, so. I'm going to cut it back to Lauren to talk about how this play opens.
No, just they get blood. They make blood everywhere.
We have a scene out of, like, Carrie or something.
Completely. I think they were trying to be a little bit Carrie.
And everything about this play is horrific. Because, I mean, just listening to what he wanted, Peter McNichol's character wanted to do, and then listening to kind of what Wednesday said, it was like, it's pedantic, it's amateur, there's nothing redeemable about this. And then she has her conversion and she takes part of it. And what we see is, like, this is a preposterous thing. Even the parents are bored with it.
Well, we have to describe the play. The pilgrims come out and they have a musical number. And
it's about a Pugsley in a turkey costume.
I was going to say, and then
eat me.
I am a turkey, kill me. And then he just goes, eat me, eat me, eat me, as he's skipping around the stage. They, again, have taken all of the... non-Aryan kids and made them Native Americans, made them animals to kill, and then they reenact a Powhatan massacre. It is amazing. It's really, because the parents aren't expecting any of this, and Joel's, like, ultra-Jewish Nevershe parents are like, this is not a place we should have taken us.
And his dad is Barry Sonnenfeld.
Sonnenfeld. And then he takes down the bandstand they're sitting on, which is also fantastic.
And in true Addams Family fashion, like, I think we're meant to assume that everybody was either killed or thrown away. We never see that.
Although we do literally see the camp counselors on a spit rotating over a fire.
And they pour gasoline under Amanda as she's tied to the stake. And Wednesday lights the match where we get a legitimate smile from her.
Okay. And we have the Salem witch party.
It's almost like we're led to assume that everybody died in horrific, horrific ways. But we're never shown any of it. Like, Amanda's parents are like, what do you mean you're going to torture our daughter? They stand up and then they get hit in the face with cream pies.
That's right, yes.
That's a nothing. But they didn't stop it, so something else must have happened.
Well, which, in a Ken Adams thing, is how Dr. Strangelove was supposed to end as well, right? The pie fight, the president is hit.
Ooh, yeah, that was...
well, it was a Kennedy joke. But I will say, the scene ends with, like, I don't know, The Great Escape? Like, there's a chain link fence, and Wednesday and Pugsley just steal a truck, or a bus, or a van.
Yeah.
And they drive off into the distance after... Her first on-screen kiss with Kurt Brown.
First kiss,
because they have also gotten a letter that Uncle Fester's married Joan Cusack.
Debbie.
The help.
Which is...
And they're concerned for Uncle Fester, which they're right to be, because I believe after this is the scene where they try and go to Debbie and Fester's mansion, and Debbie won't let the Adams see Fester.
Right. Well, she isolates Fester. Well, we should just cut back to
the other
plot.
Yeah.
We should come back to the other plot. So we have a bachelor party, which is great because you have this, you know, Lurch rolls out the massive cake and he, you know, and there's some phrase like, and we have a surprise for you.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Ta-da. And then he takes the top off the cake and there's smoke and he goes, Lurch, did you put the lady in before you bake the cake? And he goes,
Poor girl.
C'est la vie.
Yeah, poor girl, c'est la vie. At least they're dancing again. Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's wonderful.
And again, like, Gomez just takes up that whole scene.
He does.
He does.
Every scene he's in, he just takes over the entire scene. He eats the
scenery. It's so good. And I want to watch more Raul Julia stuff. I'm just afraid I'll be disappointed because...
Kiss of the Spider Woman's a good movie.
I'll look it up.
The one he did that MST3K ripped on, that was bad.
That was bad. You're thinking of Overdrawn at the Memory Bank,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, that was really bad.
He did a good impersonation of Humphrey Bogart in that movie, though.
I guess, yeah.
He also did Street Fighter that we talked about on the podcast.
Previous episode, yeah.
I mean, but again, like, I could just watch him.
But he's the best part about that film.
I agree.
By far.
I mean, he could be in Bad Stings and still be great at it. It's just a shame that he died young, like you said at the beginning.
Yeah, and so they get married. Cousin It is doing the officiating. And Cousin It's son, daughter... What?
Yeah.
Oh, what? When? Yes. I forgot about what.
He married the woman from the first movie.
Yes, and she comes back. Dan Hedaya's, like...
Wife?
Whatever. Yeah. Wife, co-conspirator.
What's his name? What?
But they have a little one.
A little cousin,
yeah. Yeah, it's good.
I just imagine, and Lauren's probably going to throw something at me when I say this, that would lead to some horrible rug burn feelings during the delivery.
God help me. God help me. But yeah, so...
They go on the honeymoon.
No, but she even says at the wedding, you know, Fester does all these heartfelt vows. Yeah, I'll do anything for you. I'll love you. Do anything, and she just goes, ditto.
And then they cut, smash cut to Hawaii, which is funny in and of itself.
Because it's the 90s, everyone honeymooned in Hawaii.
Right.
Is this where... We were this close to a sandals joke, right? A sandals resort. Yeah.
Is this where Fester's got a wig on and like a turtleneck?
No, that's when they come back. That's at the mansion.
Because this is where she tries to kill him repeatedly.
Well, she throws that, I think, the TV or the radio in the tub. And, you know, we get the whole scene with him.
I ordered a thousand romantic songs from Time Life.
but that's the joke because I don't know if your parents ever did it. My dad bought the two disc sets of the Christmas music, 100 Christmas songs
from
Time Life.
They used to do everything. Yeah,
that's the only way back in the day you could get Muppet Show episodes,
probably.
But again, if you guys don't watch TV, you're listening a demographic younger than we are. But after say 8 o'clock. TV just turned to garbage. And on Comedy Central and stuff, you would watch Daily Show, South Park reruns, and in between was worse and worse things. Time Life was the first, and then eventually it was catheters.
Especially after like 10 o'clock, prime time. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I didn't know this movie is actually PG-13.
That's highly rated.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me, but.
Yeah.
Huh.
Surprise me, but it is.
Was the first one PG-13?
It may be.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was.
Huh. I guess for like scary images or something.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, and I guess.
I mean, Adelaide watched it with us, and she's, because of me, she loves Adam's Family now.
Yeah.
And so thankfully she'll have Gomez and Morticia as positive role models as opposed to being Kelly.
She's just a modern woman who wants the normal things, a loving husband, a good family, and just time to seek out the dark forces and join their hellish crusade.
Exactly.
Call it girls' night.
What we all want.
We do get the joke when she throws the radio into the tub. We get the throwback to the TV show where Fester is electrocuted. And she's just like, oh, this, I finally did it. And then we see a light, and he's got the light bulb in his mouth, and he's powering it by himself.
Yeah.
It's also, and this might only be Daniel, but it's filmed like a scene from American Psycho, where the music's on, she has the thing up, and she drops it. I guess also John Cusack holding up the speaker.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's so true.
But it's just like, but then the whole room erupts, like, because it's got the lights on the vanity, the lights everywhere, and they go pop, 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 and then he's just the only thing glowing. It's well shot.
It's very well shot.
It is.
And you forget, I mean, because again, Chris Lloyd is probably my height. They dress him like a linebacker in this, so he looks more shuffling.
But he's incredible. Very round and tortoisey, they're trying.
Actually, Bruno Kirby loaned, at least the first one, I'm sure he did it again for this one, he loaned the fat suit that he used in The Godfather to Chris Lloyd to be Fester.
Really? Okay.
But it's all for me in the shoulders, because when you're tall and you're lanky, you have this kind of thin build based around your kind of neck. So to make him not look as tall, they make his shoulders this wide and bulky. Yeah. So he just kind of, he lurches around. He kind of leans into it. But he also
leaned more on his knees to make himself look shorter and stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when he's around the kids, he kind of sticks his head around their side and he leans. It's all in the physicality, which is what you want from Chris Lloyd.
Yeah.
The cast, when they talked about the show, said the hardest part about this movie was the makeup.
I'm sure.
Mm. Oh yeah.
So Morticia and Uncle Fester, because it would take like 4 hours to kind of get those, you know, signature looks.
And I just like to think. Raul Julia just looks like that normally. He just needs to, you know, put some balm in his hair and he's okay.
Right.
Oh, no, first of all, it's pomade because he's a classy motherfucker.
Well, yes.
Yeah. And second of all, they at least let him have color to his skin because he's not tan, but he's at least human colored. Morticia and Fester are so pale.
Yeah.
Wednesday too. But for her, I imagine they just put on like white foundation. Well, like they're not going to make her sit for 36 hours.
It might have been for the first movie, but. Angelica Houston, they actually did have to like pin back her skin to give her like a really tight look. Like the dress itself was incredibly
tight. She had a corset.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her skin, corset. Like her neck and her cheeks and all that had to be pinned back.
So
she would look incredibly gaunt
and
thin.
This is neither here nor there, but because we're here, I guess. The woman, Cassandra Peterson, who plays Elvira, turned 70 today.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she did.
But again, it's just the same kind of like the pin back, the V-neck, the tight. Like
I would watch a girls movie with Morticia and Elvira.
Oh my God, can you imagine like a road trip movie with the two of them?
Yeah.
I mean, great. Elvira already had a pretty good movie.
Is Jim Varney in it?
He is not, no.
That's surprising.
That is a shock.
Ian McClurg is in it, though.
Okay, yeah.
I have not seen the Elvira, what is it, Mistress of the Dark, the movie, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But I do like her as a ghost host kind of character. Mm-hmm. So.
But Daddy's increasingly frustrated because Fester keeps surviving. And they come back home, she's on the tarmac, and a hearse driver says, like, I have your hearse, ma'am. Where's the body? Oh, he's back there.
And he's like, he's holding the luggage, which is a gag.
And meanwhile, Pubert starts getting, quote unquote, sick.
Yes, right. Oh, he turns cute. He turns adorable.
Blonde, curly hair, and blue-eyed.
Not in this house.
And rosy cheeks.
Dimples.
Oh, when the mom says dimples and Gomez bites his fist and faints, it's so funny.
He could be a doctor or even president.
And thud. It's so good.
And Gomez goes down the spiral.
Yes.
He just spirals out.
Because he's lost his son, he's now, and his brother. At this point, there's a courier sends a letter that says, we don't want to see you anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Fester says that he's breaking off relations with the family. And so they go confront Debbie, which I think we already described. They're living in a big mansion, and Fester won't come down from the top floor. So they go to the police to file a report, and that's where we see Nathan Lane.
Yeah, and...
Again, Gomez just owns this scene. He's trying to make this police report of how his brother is being held captive, and Nathan Lane is the intake officer, and he's just not believing it.
Well, I don't know that Nathan Lane is in this because he played Gomez on Broadway in the Addams Family musical.
Yeah.
And if for audience that don't know this, there's actually an amazing musical of the Addams Family. It's incredible. John has an awesome shirt on of it on right now.
I saw it at the Fox. It's fantastic.
And so I just love, I don't know if there was that connection there with him being Gomez on Broadway, but I love that they brought him back.
Well, and the dialogue is great. He goes, "I demand justice. Someone has married my brother." And he goes, "No."
And he goes, no.
She took him to Hawaii. They have a large, expensive home where they make love constantly. He goes, "I hate when that happens. Arrest her without delay." Arrest who? My Debbie, my brother's wife, the temptress of Waikiki. Who are you? What are you? And who moved the rock? He goes, "You must issue a subpoena. I believe they own Gomez. No, a Buick." And then you smash cut to credits.
And I love the, like, "I have seen horrors," and Lurch raises his hand. "I have seen the very vile depths of humanity." They're at camp.
They're at camp.
Although there until now, I have never seen you.
Hook'em, book. What does he say? Hook'em, book'em, and
cook'em. Yeah.
And basically, the Adams get arrested. They're, I think, released later, but they abandon their attempts at freeing Fester.
And so Debbie decides she's going to kill him on their 3-week anniversary, which is
an important milestone.
I feel bad for Fester, but it's also so stupid. It's all stupid. It's funny that Fester is kind of the plot device for both these movies. But whatever. She sets up a bomb in the house and a present for him.
It's a bomb!
Yeah, that's right.
What?
He guesses what it is.
I know. Wait for my birthday.
But he's trying to make the most disgusting looking meatloaf that's ever existed.
But he's trying.
He's trying.
He's doing Mr. Debbie. Like he's got the hairpiece on. He's wearing a pink apron, and he must have been trying to make dinner.
He's trying
so hot because he's wearing that fat suit. He's wearing the uniform. He's wearing, on top of that, this wool jumper. On top of that, an apron and that horrible wig. On top of a bald cap, I assume. Oh, poor man.
Christopher Lloyd was actually so self-conscious about him in this role.
Oh, really?
In reading about it, Uncle Fester was his favorite character of the comic strip, and so. He loved that. So he actually felt really self-conscious that he didn't want to be too, like, Back to the Future.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And with Doc, you know, and getting off all the height of that. But, you know, he ended up doing a fabulous job, I think. And he finally admitted that he thinks he did it pretty adequately. Well, but it's just kind of funny.
It's great because, A, I love Chris Lloyd. Back to the Future, I think, is my favorite movie of all time. It's a masterpiece.
I got his autograph at Dragon Con. I got a signed photo of Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Got it framed. It's great.
Cool.
Previous panelist who hasn't been on in a while, Emmy Rose, toured him around Dragon Con. She was the point person for him.
But he was really nice.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I forget what Vermont or Delaware town he lives in, but he apparently just does the community theater. Like he's the director. So he just
love it.
I just like the idea that you'd like, "What do you want to do this weekend, Mother?" "Well, let's see the play at the local playhouse." It's just Chris Lloyd doing something.
I like to think it's just one man shows that he's just putting on, and whether people are there or not.
Buddy, you can't eat a piece of fruit and throw the peel away.
Was he ever nominated for an Oscar?
I'm sure he has been, but I don't know if he's won.
I don't think Oscar. I would say Emmy for Reverend Jim on Taxi.
Emmy, yeah.
But like, he's just not usually in those kinds of roles. I mean, we did Camp Nowhere already. I want to do Richie Rich where he plays that drifter who kidnapped, or not Richie Rich. Dennis the Menace. Yes, Dennis the Menace.
He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest way back in the day.
But I think the Academy Awards were Jack Nicholson and Danny DeVito?
Danny DeVito didn't win for that.
No, nominated.
Nominated. I forget. Jack Nicholson won.
Chief.
I mean, it could have been Chief. That dude who now plays the voice of Chucky.
Brad Dourif. I think you're right.
I think Dourif was nominated for, because he's the one who has the whole cycle and kills himself after the porno's found or whatever.
No, He invited a woman over on a date into his room, and Nurse Ratched finds the woman.
That's right.
And threatens to tell his mother.
By the way, Nurse Ratched, underrated as a horror icon. Like, she is so scary.
Louise Fletcher got an Oscar for that, so hey.
She gives us nurses a bad name.
She does. Nurse Ratched. But she's excellent in that film.
True.
She is excellent in that film.
Very true.
So Debbie goes out to buy champagne. This is where she goes to apparently a sailor bar and is just sitting on the bar like it's World War II. It's great. And again, Tony Shalhoub is the one with his arm around her singing a song.
Yep.
And her line is essentially, "Don't worry, boys, I'll be back in half an hour." And so they just grab this old lady and start singing to her instead. Great. Wonderful. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
It's perfect.
And meanwhile, the house explodes. And she's standing outside going, kind of fake weeping tears. It's like, help, help. Oh, dear.
She's putting on an act for what she's going to say to the cops when they show up.
And Fester just walks out of the flames.
Yeah.
That's right.
With thing on his arm, doesn't he?
Or his shoulder. Yeah.
And holding the meatloaf. Holding the terrible meatloaf.
The charred meatloaf.
At this point, Thing shows up, right?
Yeah.
And they haul ass to Lollapalooza. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. They're in this car and they're driving. Debbie follows in this Mercedes. But, like, literally, there's a hand on the wheel, and then it appears on the brake and the accelerator, and then back on the wheel. It's so good. And I know we derided this a little bit at first, but at times it's almost a Naked Gun movie where you start a scene just to set up jokes. Mm-hmm. It works. No insult to it. But that's what this is. There's a high-speed chase with only a hand driving. It's like Dracula's ship or something. Like, it's so funny. Oh, it's so good.
And then we get, after Debbie shows up, she kidnaps the Adams. Well, Fester shows up to the mansion, and then Debbie's following him.
And the kids are there, too. They escaped.
The kids are there, too.
Yeah.
And
so Debbie, everyone's all together.
And Debbie kidnaps them all and straps them all to electric chairs. Except Huber.
My wife goes, "How many electric chairs do you have?" And I'm like, "How many do you need?"
It is the Adams. Like, they have a guillotine. Like, come on.
It's true. And I do like, especially the guillotine feels like it was a school project that they did. Like, they had to do a diorama, so they just created.
They were doing the French Revolution that day or something.
Yeah. So they made a real guillotine. And so this was just their Edison project or something, and they just didn't get it right the first six times.
Uncle Fester helped with it.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
He's a helpful uncle.
He really is. He's very caring.
I mean, and I will also say, for all the talk of Gomez and, well, Angelica Houston, like, Raul Julia and Angelica Houston have chemistry, but Raul Julia also has real chemistry with his brother. Like, you believe that they really get along? Because there's that scene where he's like, "Oh, kids, your brother, your dad used to hold me, like, in the crib." He goes, "I took out your father's brain."
"You did?" And then they both start laughing.
And he throws Fester against the wall and starts throwing knives, and they're laughing the whole, like, you get this real affection. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's great. Ah, it's been a while since I've thrown a knife at my brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just remember.
Memories.
But yeah, so there's this scene.
She's telling them how she became a evil murderess because her parents got, she wanted a ballerina Barbie
and she got a Malibu Barbie.
A Malibu Barbie.
How horrible.
And I love Granny sympathizing.
And wonderful.
Granny's like, you were right to be mad.
Now the best part of that,
the Adams are like sympathizing with her. They're like, absolutely.
Well, was it this scene or the scene at the mansion where Morticia hears what's going on? It's like, "You've kidnapped Fester. You control him. You tortured him. That I understand. But pastels."
That was at the mansion. That's when she kicks her out. Ugh, which is so good.
Like, she picked the best family to try and kill, but they would have understood. They would have helped her. Probably.
Yes.
If they had thought that it would, like, make her a better person of some sort.
Or if they just thought it was fun.
Or fun, yeah. I mean, yeah, they apparently kill people just on whims.
Well, anyway, they have the whole Manhunter scene with Debbie walking through her childhood and talking Malibu Barbie. And the Gomez and Morticia actually think they're about to die.
Like, they're holding hands and, you know.
Yeah, no, they're in it. And it also doesn't seem like it's the first time they've been strapped to electric chairs.
No.
I did have to expect them to say, like, "Gomez, does this remind you of our first date?
Right. Like, there was almost a joke about that vacation to Sing Sing, right? Yeah. And that's when Qbert shows up after grabbing a knife.
Wait. Did you just call him Qbert?
Oh, sorry, Qbert.
He is Qbert.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he electrocutes her by attaching two severed wires together, and
he's back to normal at this point, by the way. He's no longer blonde. He's got the mustache back.
And just like Sam Raimi's second Spider-Man movie, it's not explained. We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Though I will say, she does get Daniel Stern's electrocution death from Home Alone 2, where he's just holding the wires and the hair just goes, woo!
She burns up.
And then she turns to dust and blows away. And everyone's
kind of her credit cards.
That's right, the gold cards, specifically. We're wrapping it up here. The movie is almost over, unless, you know, whatever. But I will say, the weirdest line in this, the most out of place line, I will say, Wednesday asks Uncle Fester, do you ever miss Debbie? And he goes, sometimes late at night. And you're just like, hold on. And then he goes, what is it? She would look over me, say, Fester, get out of the room. It's very weird to tell your 13-year-old niece.
They're the Addams Family, though. I mean, that feels very appropriate for Uncle Fester.
Yeah. Loud sex in the house.
This movie literally opens with Fester howling at the moon.
Yeah. It's true.
It's true, yeah.
This is Universal?
Paramount? I think Paramount.
So we get the pan around the mountain. Yeah. They kind of fade cut to a moon. And then Fester's howling at it. It's great. I love it.
And they end with Fester meeting the nanny for what?
Dementia. Who is also, like, not only a bald woman, but they made it incredibly pale.
Yes. What's happening is this is Pubert's first birthday celebration, so all the other Adams relatives are showing up. Yeah. So Cousin It is there, and some of the ones from the first one are there, I think.
It's the exact same movie they did in the first one, where it was Halloween, and they just kind of summarize everything. So this is what happened.
This is the mamushka.
Yeah.
It's the scene with the mamushka from the first one, I think. Right? Whatever.
Although that's not quite the end. The end comes in the family crypt.
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
Yes.
Well, I guess just for one previous joke, the engagement ring came from great grandma Adams, and they're
she was buried with that.
And then Debbie swings the shovel over her shoulder, which is we get the walk through the cemetery, yada yada, which is so it is established before, and then we get it again at the end, Daniel.
Yes, and Wednesday and I forget Joel. Wednesday and Joel are having a bit of a teenage romance in the crypt. To the point where they go up to Debbie's gravestone, because technically she's an Adams, so she's earned the right to be buried with the Adams family. And then, what do we get? We get a scene about how Wednesday just wants to scare all the boys, and when Joel says something like, what would you say if a boy said he liked you? I pity him.
Yeah.
Dude. No, what Wednesday says too, which I love, she goes, you know, Debbie really does how she doesn't kill her, you know, her husband's correctly. If I did, I would just scare her to death.
Yes.
And then the hand comes out.
It's a rip off of Carrie.
Yeah. 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 And again, a genuine smile because she's scaring Joel to death. And the musical is actually, the Amazing Musical is when Wednesday and Joel are getting married.
Yeah. Oh, there
and
you
the
go.
The whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's amazing. And the whole thing with that.
Also, so. I guess a little Pet Cemetery. It's very
cool. It's very Carrie. I felt Carrie.
It's good.
Pet Cemetery.
Are we supposed to assume that was Thing hiding in and taking
part? Yeah, that was my assumption.
That's kind of always been my assumption.
Frankly, to me, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, it also, with how calm and, I mean, again, she's supposed to be a teen, so it's not like she's acting, like, sexy, but she's, like, in control of the situation. Wednesday's like, I know this something is going to happen. I just need to control the situation. And so she's smiling, you know, in a knowing way at Joel. And it's very kind of like, he has a lot to learn. And we also should establish at this point, he showed up to the party looking very Gomez-y. Like he has the broken mustache.
Yeah.
He has the hair slicked back. He was already a pale kid, but he's wearing my first smoking jacket. It's a funny look opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Because Wednesday essentially dresses like her mother, wearing the kind of tight fitting black, although she wears kind of a Dutch collar at the top. But
And then after that, we get the one disappointment of that movie, which is that remake end credit of Woomp There It Is, called Woomp Adams Family or whatever it was.
It's atrocious. Yeah. I turned it off immediately.
It was terrible.
It was, no.
Final thoughts. Let's start with you, John.
Well, I love the Addams Family movies. And when I think of Gomez, Morticia, and all of them, I think of these characters.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like I said at the top, like, I think the first movie had a better plot, but this one just nailed the one-liners so well. Like, I love it. I love everything about it. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the sequel, Addams Family Reunion.
Awful.
Ooh.
No one from the original cast came back.
Wasn't Tim Curry?
I just looked it up. Tim Curry was Gomez. Daryl Hannah was Morticia. Nicole Fugere was Wednesday. No. Carol Stricken was back. So
someone did show
Patrick
up.
Patrick Thomas was Uncle Fester.
No.
Yeah, like, this is just a bad...
What that sounds like to me is a made-for-TV
movie. I think
movie.
It was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
And, no, I vaguely remember watching, like, 10 minutes of it and turning it off.
Yeah. I saw the trailer for that once, and I've never seen the actual movie, but...
But I love these films.
Even Tim Curry looked like shit in that. But anyway, this is the one sequel that's probably one of the few sequels anyway that's as good as the original, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. If you don't like this style of humor, if you don't like these one-liners, if you didn't like the first movie, you're not going to like this. But if you did like the first movie, then this is great. I mean, even on its own, it's great. You didn't need to see the first movie in order to understand what was going on. So, yeah, I mean, this was a whole lot of fun.
No, I was way more entertained than I thought I would be, than I remembered. It was a joy to relive this again, because I used to love to watch this when I was younger. I loved everything about it. I think the cast is phenomenal. Really well done. Highly recommend.
And I will pause for a second just to, sorry, Nick. Was this available for streaming?
It's on Paramount Plus.
I don't have that.
I own a copy of it.
Yeah, so. I own a copy of it. That I had a moment of glee when we couldn't find it, and I turned to my wife and I said, "I have it on DVD.
Yeah.
Hook up the DVD player."
Nice.
How do I put this? I'll get a little filmy for a while. This movie is clearly done by a cinematographer, because every shot is beautiful. I don't know how else to put it. Like, It feels creepy and eerie, and even at summer camp, which is bright and beautiful, they then put a filter on it and film some weird angles, so it feels creepy even though it's just a bright, sunny summer day. And we all went to summer camps to one degree or another. There's nothing creepy about them. They make it feel eerie. And again, like, Sonnenfeld just had a good script, and he had good actors, so he didn't care about the minutiae, because they would do that. He just filmed it to make it beautiful. The first one, like you said, has a better plot. I probably watched the first one more often, but this movie is almost better to just throw on the TV, because you don't have to care about the plot. You're just waiting for the joke to come. Mm-hmm. And so, like Sudsy said, I don't know which one's better. I don't think it matters. They're just different movies. But in the end, they're both kind of equally good choices. If you haven't seen them, I don't know how you missed them, but other than maybe the Mission Impossible movies and The Fugitive, these are the best TV shows to become movies ever. Mm-hmm. And they almost...
Based on a comic strip.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but it's amazing. But then they ruin every other movie that comes after it, because, like, what are you going to choose instead? Baywatch? You know... 21 Jump Street, the Garfield movies, like, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies movies. The only one that comes kind of close is... Richie Rich is terrible. The Brady Bunch movie, the first one is kind of funny because it's a parody. It's a satire. And then what's the one? Josie and the Pussycats is also pretty good.
Yeah.
Charlie's Angels, I'll need to rewatch that. It was bad, but the TV show was bad, too. Oh, so.
I would say at least that one's fun. Yeah, it's not a good movie, but it's fun. But, like, this is a legit... These two are legit good movies.
Yeah.
And frankly, as I get older, sometimes I just want a comedy to throw on the TV. These are movies you can just throw on the TV, and you probably haven't seen this 1,000 times, like those slapstick comedies from the 80s. They should be. But anyway, you're a patron, so... You know, you either like our opinions or you hate them. I got something very passive aggressive sent to me about how my opinions of Hellraisers were wrong. So, you know.
Matt's emailing you again?
No. Well, they liked your opinion of Hellraiser. But anyway.
I also just want to add that I feel like this movie is not outdated. Like, I feel like it does kind of turn the test of time.
Yeah.
It's very similar themes. I didn't feel like it was, oh, you would only get some of the jokes if you were from the 90s.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed.
Anyway, we'll wrap it up here. So thanks for listening, subscribing, and paying to listen to this. We love you for paying to listen to this. Please tell your friends to pay us too, and rate and review everywhere you get this podcast. Thanks, guys.
We're out.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.